Your extension worth $19.5 million. In Major League Baseball, Houston Astros' George Springer sprained his left thumb. He'll miss 2 weeks worth of action. I'm David Gascon. We are Buckhorn!
When severe weather cuts across Lorain and Medina counties, depend on the radio station on the edge of the storm. Your official weather station, locally owned and locally responsive. AM 930 WEOL.
Hello, this is Bullseye on Weather on AM 930. We might see scattered showers overnight and then again Tuesday. Our low tonight, 73. Tuesday's high, 83.
Right now, the sun's out. It's 86.
It's Bullseye on the Afternoon with Andy Bullbarch and Matt Douglas on AM 930 WEOL.
Minutes after 4 o'clock, Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL. Yours truly joined alongside Matt Douglas. We got you until 6:37 tonight. That is time for Indians baseball. Browns kick off the preseason this Thursday against the New York Football Giants. And here to talk Browns with us, you can read all of his work at BrownsZone.com. It's Scott Petrek, Browns beat reporter with the Chronicle-Telegram and the Medina Gazette. Scott, as always, a pleasure to have you with us. And obviously the big Browns news of the day today, the trade of Corey Coleman. That went down last night, and boy, that just has all kinds of questions coming your way from us. I mean, were you surprised at all? Let's begin there. Were you shocked at all to see that Corey Coleman was traded?
I don't know if I'd say shocked. I knew the Browns hadn't been happy with him dating back to last year. You know that John Dorsey didn't draft him, right? So there's always a chance that that leaves a guy vulnerable. The timing surprised me some because Josh Gordon's still not back. You know, now that there's no Corey Coleman, it's really Jarvis Landry and a bunch of question marks. So that's kind of how it feels. And then you always think, man, they could have done better than a seventh-round pick. Obviously, Dorsey tried to do better, and it just shows you how desperate they were to get rid of him, that they're willing to take only a seventh-round pick in 2020.
Are we to believe that there was some real bad blood between Corey Coleman and the current Browns brass?
You know, I don't know if I'd characterize it as bad blood. I think I might say bad blood's not right. I think they were just disappointed, frustrated with what Corey had done through 2 years. And I think it's on a lot of levels. I think everybody points to the football, right? He didn't have enough production. He was injured, had a broken hand 2 years in a row. The big drop in the finale last year against Pittsburgh that sealed the 0-16 season. But to me, it goes beyond that. I think he struggled to learn the playbook, you know, since he's been here. And there's a new playbook this year. And you could see coordinator Todd Haley getting frustrated with him in practice because he'd line up in the wrong spot or not do the right thing. I think there were questions about his effort. You know, there was a play out here last week that just comes to my mind where Corey ran an in route. The cornerback jumped in front and made an interception. And everybody applauds the corner, and Haley goes right to Coleman and criticizes him for not trying hard enough at the ball. He's like, that could have been your ball type of thing. And I think you just saw that repeatedly where it was too much. It overshadowed the handful of good practices he would have because he had a couple of good ones back-to-back last week that I think encouraged some people. But even when that was going on, I always felt like there's too many bad spots within the good practices, and I just never had confidence that you'd see that consistent performance out of Corey.
Well, Scott, talking about what Corey Coleman might have done there to find himself on the trading block, who are some of those guys who have shown well here in training camp who might be taking that position over?
Well, I mean, you got to start with Antonio Callaway. He's got a similar skill set to Coleman. You know, they're almost the same size. And Callaway's a little thicker, but they're both 5'11". You see burst out of Callaway. You see long-distance speed out of Callaway. Fourth-round pick, probably had first-round talent, but had plenty of issues at Florida. The Browns decided to take a chance on him in the fourth round. And I'm out here watching practice now, and he's getting a bunch of reps with the first team because they need somebody to step up. And Adam Henry, the receivers coach, is with him at the line of scrimmage, kind of walking him through the plays because it's a big adjustment learning this playbook. And now, you know, he's moving over to the X receiver spot where Corey was. So I think they'd love for him to seize that spot. I think there's still questions about can he be the full-time guy. They have Rashard Higgins, who, you know, seems like just a guy who had a couple of games last year. So until Josh Gordon comes back, assuming he does, there's a big hole there. And it feels like the Coleman move is just the first of a couple moves, whether that's, you know, Gordon coming back, and but more likely something else happening, whether it's trying to sign Brandon LaFell, who was cut by the Bengals, or going after Dez Bryant, or something, claiming a guy off waivers. It feels like Dorsey would not go into the season with just Landry and then a bunch of question marks.
Well, Scott, that leads me into my next question, because a lot has been made today about what this Corey Coleman transaction could mean as far as how it relates to Josh Gordon. Because, yeah. I mean, the Browns right now have kind of tried to hide that situation the best they can, but with a talent like Josh Gordon, that's a really difficult thing to hide. How do you think that Corey Coleman transaction affects the timeline of Josh Gordon? Do you think it affects it at all?
I don't. The only thing I think you might try to read into it is that the Browns are sincere when John Dorsey says we are absolutely believe that Josh Gordon's going to come back this year, you know, because you would think that obviously that leaves a huge hole on at the receiver position. You know, like I mentioned, Jarvis Landry and then who? So I think that that makes me think that they believe Josh Gordon will be back. But overall, I believe the Coleman move was independent of anything else as far as they were just done with him. You know, they were done with not being satisfied on the field, not being satisfied off the field, and they figured we're better off without him. You know, they had a worse receiving core last year because they didn't have Jarvis Landry, so is it going to kill him to get rid of Corey Coleman? Probably not, although from a talent perspective, he's better than a lot of the guys on this roster right now. It's just the whole package. The Browns were done with it.
We're talking with Scott Petrek, Browns beat reporter with the Chronicle-Telegram, Medina Gazette, and BrownsZone.com. You know, we're coming up on the first preseason game of the year, and obviously everybody very excited about what's going on with the quarterback. I wouldn't call it competition just yet, but what are your general impressions of the two top signal callers on the depth chart, Scott, with in regards to Tyrod Taylor and Baker Mayfield? Over the first 2 weeks of camp, what's really stood out most about both those guys?
I think Tyrod Taylor is just the guy you expected him to be. Gets everybody in and out of the huddle. Gets you in the right play. Doesn't turn the ball over much. He, you know, he shows a good ability to get out of the pocket when it starts to break down. Looks like he's got enough arm strength. Throws with touch. You know, it feels like he's trying to throw a real catchable ball all the time, you know, and isn't forcing it there. And a leader, you know, the ultimate leader that's really taking ownership of this team. And then with Baker, you know, Baker's been impressive in practice. You know, he's got a good arm. He's got a quick release. It looks like he makes decisions in a hurry. He'd been real careful with the ball until he threw an interception Friday and then threw one Saturday. But those are the first ones he'd thrown in. You know, he'd gone seven practices without throwing one. So the question for Baker is a matter of experience and how's he going to handle it when the pocket starts to collapse, because he's just not big enough to stand in there and throw over the top of people. And that's where he's had the most troubles, when the defensive line has gotten a pass rush and a push, and they have often because the offensive line is still a work in progress, then Baker tends to get swallowed up and you don't see the quick decisions like you do when he's got a clean pocket and can get the ball out.
What are your expectations for Baker Mayfield in particular this Thursday against the Giants? Just because it seems like because he has performed well by all accounts at practice, the expectation level, especially for the first preseason game, is going to be just a little bit higher, since the assumption is the Giants aren't going to throw anything too complex at him.
I'd agree with that. I think he's set the bar kind of high for himself, and my guess is he reaches it. You know, he's going to be playing against backups. He's probably going to get a good amount of playing time. Why wouldn't you give him a good amount of playing time, right? The only reason you wouldn't is if you're concerned about the offensive line, the protection holding up. But I think you got to play him as much as you can. And, you know, I expect him to be good because he won't be going against upper echelon talent. And I think he has shown that he can do what he needs to do at this level in that circumstance, right? It's not week one. It's preseason. And I expect him to play well. I do.
Speaking of the offensive line, Scott, Joel Bitonio is taking over for Joe Thomas there at that left tackle position with that move. What's he looked like there?
He's been better than I think maybe even he expected. You know, when I try to, there's so much, you know, there's 90 guys out here trying to key in on certain things at certain times. But when I've isolated on Joel, he's done a really good job against Myles Garrett. I think his strength shows up when he locks in to Myles. Now the question is, you know, can he live 65 snaps by himself going against premier elite pass rushers with the quickness of defensive ends? It's a different animal, like he said, blocking a guy inside when you have help and guys around you than being left on the island to left tackle. So he's got to prove that he can do it. He's got to fully accept that switch because he was reluctant to do that. And I still think in the back of his mind, he hopes he gets to go back to left tackle. But, you know, Greg Robinson's either got to seize that job or they got to bring in somebody else because there's no other better options on the roster right now.
Sure. The other thing I wanted to ask you, Scott, you said you're trying to keep an eye on 90 guys. I mean, with all the cameras there for Hard Knocks and for Baker Mayfield's reality show, is it a bit of a zoo out there? Is it a little hard to see the guys on the field sometimes?
A little bit. Every once in a while, you do get a Hard Knocks camera in front of you. And they are all over the place. It's going to be interesting to see what they decide to show because they got plenty of storylines to pick from. So I'm looking forward to Tuesday night.
Sure.
Scott, let's take a look at the other side of the ball for a minute here. I think on paper, when you look at the front seven, that certainly appears to be the strength, just because when you look at that secondary, there doesn't appear to be a whole lot of depth. Are there any individuals on that front seven that have stood out early on in training camp to you?
You know, the ends have been good. Garrett has been good. You know, I mentioned him going against Bitonio, but before that, he'd been really good. I don't know how much is it Garrett or Sean Coleman, but, you know, you just see Garrett's natural athleticism show up a lot. I think Ogba's been good. I've seen a little bit out of Larry Ogunjobi, the second-year defensive tackle, and I think he's got a chance to have a breakthrough year. And a guy off the radar who has been hurt, and I think he's just coming back today, if my notes are correct, is Jannard Avery, the fifth-round linebacker out of Memphis. He's shown up, and they can use him as a pass rusher, and he could have an impact in certain personnel packages this year.
I mentioned in the secondary, there certainly seems to be a lack of depth and maybe lack of experience as well, but obviously a lot of people are going to be focused on the first-round pick for the Browns this year. And Denzel Ward, what kinds of things has he done to catch your eye in camp?
Yeah, he's been really good. I actually sat down with Denzel today. Hopefully I'll have stories by this weekend, just about his whole journey. But, you know, he's been the one really constant from all those cornerbacks, which I think you'd hope for the number four pick, but I don't know you'd necessarily expect it from a rookie. And he shows elite speed, and he shows great competitiveness. And you just watch him fight to the end of plays and try to break up balls, whether it's Jarvis Landry or in minicamp with Josh Gordon. And he's impressed me. The worry is the rest of the corners. Terrence Mitchell's been better than I expected, but I don't know how much you can expect from a guy that's never really been a full-time starter in the league. T.J. Carey's been a bit of a disappointment. The Browns paid him a bunch of money, and now he's running with the second team after having a chance with the starters. And E.J. Gaines, you know, you see him out here, but he hasn't done a whole lot. So I wouldn't be surprised if Dorsey tried to add some depth at corner, even though he spent the whole offseason signing guys and drafting guys there.
Scott, any players that you've seen in camp so far that you really think are really going to have to ramp it up and show something in these preseason games over the next few weeks in order to stay on the roster? Any surprising names?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I mean, we've talked about him a couple times. I think Sean Coleman is in trouble with getting cut. You know, I just don't know where he fits, if Greg Robinson is any good. Even if Greg Robinson is not, you know, do you save a spot so Coleman can be your swing tackle? I don't know about that. You know, he jumps out at me. You know, I think Rashard Higgins has had a good camp, but to me he's a borderline guy. But the Coleman trade pushes him up to about number three on the depth chart, so you'd have to see some more moves before he's vulnerable. you know, those are the guys that have jumped out at me. And then I think you look at the defensive ends, the backups you got, Karin Acid, Nate Orchard. You know, I think one, if not both of those guys, is vulnerable.
Good stuff as always. Well, Scott, we know you're slammed out there at camp, so we certainly appreciate you giving us some time as always, and we'll do this again soon.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Scott. Scott Petrak with the Chronicle-Telegram and the Medina Gazette. You can also catch all of Scott's work at brownszone.com. Well, you ready for that first preseason game, Matt Douglas?
Thursday night. Yeah, we'll see how Baker Mayfield does. We'll see how that offensive line does. I know Kevin Zeitler going to be out of that game as well. He's a little beat up with a calf injury, but hopefully that won't last too long, and the offensive line will be able to keep the QBs upright.
We shall see on Thursday. Time for an Indians update. After that, Your Money Now, and then after that, Matt Douglas with the local news. Bullseye on the Afternoon continues after this here on AM 930 WEOL.
Hi, this is Jim Rosenhaus with